You are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com.
I've seen you in the streets and at your political convention, talking of your crusade, talking of your nation and other things too terrible to mention. And you proclaim your Christianity, you proclaim your love of God, you talk of apple pie and mom. Well, I've just got one question and I want an answer. Tell me, who would Jesus bomb? Jesus would bomb the Syrians, 'cause they're not Jews like him. Maybe Jesus would bomb the Afghans on some kind of vengeful whim. Maybe Jesus would drive an M1 tank and he would shoot Saddam. Who would Jesus bomb? And on the battleships, I've seen you in the house upon the hill. And I've heard you talking about making the world safer and about all the men you have to kill. And you speak so glibly about your civilization and how you have the moral higher ground, while halfway around the world your explosives smash the buildings. Ah, if you could only hear the sound. But maybe Jesus would sell landmines and turn on his electric chair. Maybe Jesus would show no compassion for his enemies in the lands way over there. Maybe Jesus would have flown the planes that killed the kids in Vietnam. Who would Jesus bomb? Yes, I hear you shout with confidence as you praise the Lord, and you talk about this God you know so well. You talk of Armageddon and your final victory when all the evil forces go to hell. Well, you'd best hope you've chosen wisely on the right side of the Lord, and when you die, your conscience, it is clear. You'd best hope your atom bombs are better than the sword at the time when your reckoning is here. I don't think Jesus would send gunships into Bethlehem or jets to raise the towns of Timorese. I don't think Jesus would lend money to dictators or drive those SUVs. And I don't think Jesus would ever have dropped a single ounce of napalm. So tell me, who would Jesus bomb?
That was the incredible lyrics and music of David Robix. We are very privileged this morning to have David Robix on our show. David Robix comes from Connecticut. He has traveled the world performing. He has shared the stage with many people on the left whose sole purpose is to create transformative change in society. He's been on Democracy Now!, BBC, Al Jazeera, and other networks. His essays are published regularly on Counterpunch, Truthout, and the 200-plus songs he makes available on the web have been downloaded more than a million times. Most importantly, he's really good. He's a great guy and has great music. Thank you for being with us, David.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Your music is so engaging. It's music that has a political, social content. Where does this come from? Why is it important for you to create music in this context?
most people are interested, I think, in the world around them and would tend to write about them, about what's happening around them. It's only because of the corporate media, the Fox, NPR, these are the reasons why we think that there's something unusual about people doing what I'm doing, because I don't get played on those radio stations, and those radio stations play music that, it isn't about what's happening in the world. But that's abnormal. That's just a corporate thing to do. It's what normal people would be doing if we controlled the airwaves, is we'd be having shows like yours, and we'd be talking about what's going on in the world. That's what interests at least most people, I'd say. Certainly there's some people who just want to, write nothing but love songs and listen to nothing but love songs, and most people like love songs too, but it's a corporate decision that's all that we should listen to, and all that we should write about.
But I would argue your music is totally about love. In one of the ways that you've been introduced, I've heard people said he will make the revolution irresistible, and I think it's this really human component of your songs that really engages people in talking about these things. Now, you've been very outspoken on many issues, but one particular urgency has been the issue of Palestine. As you know, it has been now 1 year anniversary of the bombing in Gaza. You've traveled to the Middle East and have seen the conditions there. Paint a picture for us. On your personal experience, how would you describe what is happening there? Paint a picture for someone who's never been to Gaza.
I mean, I still haven't been to Gaza. I couldn't get into Gaza. We couldn't get a permit, but I traveled all over the West Bank. And, the first thing I would say about the conditions in Palestine is that they are largely invisible to visitors. It's an important thing to understand. But one of the worst things that's happening to the Palestinian people is economic strangulation of all the different towns in the West Bank. So many of the residents are unable to leave or enter, and they can't get any work, and they're living on a few dollars a day or less. They would be in many cases starving if it weren't for United Nations refugee program, and this is also because of the Israeli blockade. The Israelis are trying to starve them. It's just the United Nations won't let them die, and Hamas also does a pretty good job of attempting to feed people as well. None of that is visible. People aren't starving, so you don't have bloated bellies in the streets like in some famine or something. People are hungry, they're not starving. But you got to realize that the people you're talking to probably are not allowed to leave the town.
I want to play one of your songs because I think of you as a painter who paints with words and music. So I'm going to play a song you wrote titled Jenin. And I wonder if you could just introduce this song for us.
I wrote the song just after the Israeli demolition of much of the city of Jenin, just predicting what kinds of events would happen in the near future.
Child, what will you remember when you recall your 16th year? The horrid sound of helicopter gunships, the rumble of the tanks as they drew near. As the world went about its business, and I burned another tank of gasoline, Dow Jones lost a couple points that day while you were crying in the city of Jenin. Did they even give your parents warning before they blew the windows out with shells, while you hid inside the high school basement amidst the ringing of church bells, as you watched your teacher crumple by the doorway? And in England, they were toasting to the queen. You were so far from the thoughts of so many, huddled in the city of Janine. Were you thinking of the taunting of the soldiers, or of the shit they smeared upon the walls? Were you thinking of your cousin after torture, or Tel Aviv and its glittering shopping malls? When the fat men in their mansions say that you don't want peace, did you wonder what they mean as you sat amidst the stench inside the darkness in the shattered city of Janine? What went through your mind on that day at the sight of your mother's vacant eyes, as she lay still among the rubble beneath the blue Middle Eastern skies? As you stood upon this bulldozed building beside the settlements and their hills so green, as your tears gave way to grim determination amidst the ruins of the city of Janine. And why should anybody wonder, as you stepped on board the crowded bus across the green line, and you reached inside your jacket for the cord? Were you thinking of your neighbor's buried bodies as you made the stage for this scene, as you set off the explosives that were strapped around your waist? Were you thinking of the city of Janine?
That was the incredible David Robicks. David Robicks is my guest this morning. That is a very powerful song. And I think that it really speaks to me, because I think of all the millions of people worldwide who think of that song and relate in a very real time to the level of repression that seems to be an everyday thing for a lot of people worldwide. I'm thinking of Darfur, I'm thinking of people in Iraq, I'm thinking of Afghanistan. You know, when George Bush was the president of the U.S., everybody was anxious to see George Bush removed. You've been very critical of George Bush. Most of the world was happy to see him go, and hope was flying high with Obama. Do you see major changes in this policy?
Anybody that's hopeful about the possibility that the other corporate party is going to improve things in the United States when there's an election is unfortunately really naive, and things don't actually work that way. We're ruled by two parties, both of which are controlled by the oil companies and the insurance industry, and nothing significant changes when one party replaces the other. And the radical left progressives who have been around the block for a while, people who know their history, already knew that and were not expecting big changes under Obama. But there was a lot of hope among naive people, primarily inside the United States. I'd say that outside the United States, most people have had a lot more sense than to think that Obama was going to change things significantly. But I think there was a widespread naive impression inside the United States that big changes would happen. The big changes that have happened is we have now more troops deployed overseas than at any time during the Bush administration. I mean, we've got basically occupations now going on in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Yemen. And who knows what's next? Obama's very enthusiastic about bombing Muslims, just as Bush was. He just talks about it in a more accessible and eloquent way. But he's working for the Fortune 500. There's no question about it. In terms of domestic policy, also, it's really overwhelmingly evident. I mean, the health insurance bill that they're debating currently right now in the Congress is just a complete corporate disaster. That's not going to improve the situation significantly.
I want to play a song by you. You call it After We Torture Your Prisoners. And I'm just going to play this song, and then I want to talk a little bit about this song.
We'll get rid of the dictator, rebuild your country, make sure all your kids go to school. We'll clean up the cities, get the sewage plants running, institute parliamentary rule. We'll bring you autonomy, senators and judges, and a shiny new blue banner. We'll bring you pride and prosperity, food in your bellies, and every home a phone, fax, and scanner. After we torture our prisoners, we'll bring you decades of peace, spiritual release, free religious expression. You can say what you want in the papers you run, we'll never force a confession. After we torture our prisoners, the oil will flow just where it should go, across the desert and into the sea. You'll thank your God and the CIA that finally you are free. After we torture our prisoners, you'll all be safe with us to protect you and keep you out of harm's way. You'll thank creation and your liberation from the dark into a new day. After we torture our prisoners, you can all jump for joy, each girl and boy, and look boldly into the distance. You'll be so happy for all that we've done, for such invaluable assistance. After we torture our prisoners, you won't have to worry about tyrants and bullies, now that you have sovereignty. You can hold your head high, kiss Saddam goodbye, say hello to democracy. After we torture our prisoners, after we torture our prisoners.
That was the incredible David Robicks. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about why is it that there is this double morality in our society, and particularly in the West, where we proclaim this, fidelity of creating social democracies in a society that is reflective of the rights of human beings. On the other hand, we sort of turn a blind eye to the bombing, to the destruction of the livelihoods and lives of others.
It's really especially the case in the United States with the government in the U.S. that the double standard is so outrageous, because the U.S. actually is unlike the vast majority of countries, including the vast majority of very wealthy countries. The U.S. spends half of the tax money of its citizens on bombs and guns and weaponry, and actively goes about overthrowing foreign governments. You know, very few other countries actually do what the U.S. does. It's an empire, and it actually constantly talks about democracy and how it's trying to bring democracy to the world, and it's consistently always bringing dictatorships to the world and suppressing democracy. It's actually a complete double standard. Not just turning a blind eye to suffering, but creating massive suffering and hardship and rule by the rich in country after country while talking about doing exactly the opposite. It's a bizarre double standard that a lot of people just can't quite get a grip on, because to understand this double standard, you have to realize that the people running your country, if you're in the U.S., are just completely dishonest and lying to you constantly. It's not a pretty picture.
Are you optimistic? What keeps you striving to transform the society? What keeps you fighting and creating music that inspires others to resist a system that leaves so many out?
I think there's a lot to be optimistic about. And I think that music has an important part to play in the development and maintenance of social movements. And there's a lot of things people can do to try to contribute to the maintenance and building of social movements here and wherever. Writing songs is and performing is one small part of that picture. I am constantly optimistic just because I'm part of social movements wherever I go, and these social movements are usually full of wonderful people who are trying to do good things, and occasionally succeeding in small ways, and occasionally succeeding in very big ways, and it depends on the time and place. You know, I think for many people in many countries, we can say that the kinds of changes that we're struggling for are not going to be seen in our lifetimes. But then you look to other parts of the world where different sorts of things are happening. And I mean, in Venezuela, Bolivia, Ecuador, Uruguay, Paraguay, the left is running several countries and is actually making massive and rapid changes to societies in South America right now. There is what has often been called a revolutionary process going on in Venezuela, and I think it's a fair term. This kind of thing is especially inspiring to me when people from the left, and by that I mean people who care about humanity, are actually in power. That's especially inspiring. But social movements currently now and historically throughout the world, in every country without exception, have a tremendous impact on society and on how things are run. And of course, the corporate media and the government in many cases will tell you this isn't true, that democracy happens because of elections. You go to vote and that's it, and otherwise you should just stay home. But democracy happens in the streets. Luckily, a lot of people know that. And when people get together in large numbers in a unified way for a specific purpose, great things can be accomplished and are accomplished. And I've seen it myself, and it's inspiring to be around. Although it's certainly still the case that the wrong people are running most of the world, and that certainly can be very depressing. All the bombs and all the suffering, you know, is certainly very depressing, especially if you're, you know, beneath them. But for me, in my life, there are sources of inspiration and optimism all around me all the time.
You know, I think you're right. We're told that there are no alternatives, that, you know, it's already a done deal. But when we look around, there are, you know, thousands of alternatives. There are, you know, we have other choices. We have other models in place that we can look at. Eduardo Galeano was saying in an interview that, you know, when feudalism was the system of the day, those who were in power said, this is it. There's nothing else. You can't. And they probably went on saying that till the day right before the morning we woke up to something new. So I think that we are constantly moving forward as a society, and my hope is that when people come together, when we get out of our homes and meet others who have similar dreams of creating a society that's more just and inclusive, we will be able to achieve that, because we're the majority.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how can people access your music? And I want to end our interview with a song you wrote, which I think is very timely of the topic we're touching. It's titled We Are Everywhere. So I wonder if you could first tell us, how can people access your music, and then introduce the song as we say goodbye?
Sure. Well, they can go to davidrovics.com, and that's a good, easy place to go, where they can find lots of free music, as well as CDs to buy and songbooks and all kinds of other stuff. And I'm doing a weekly internet radio show, and they can find out about all that stuff on my website. We Are Everywhere was something that was going around, concept that we actually are the majority, as you were just saying, that we are people all over the world, including people all over the belly of the beast in the U.S. think that governments should be feeding and clothing and housing their people, that nobody should be going hungry, that there should be universal health care and universal education, that that spending lots of money on the military is a bad idea. We want renewable energy. We want to do something about global warming. We're willing to make sacrifices in order to do so. You know, most people all over the world support a progressive agenda. We are everywhere. Indeed, we are just not everywhere when in the halls of power.
Thank you so much. That was David Robics, and this is a song, We Are Everywhere. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Take care.
When I say the hungry should have food, I speak for many. When I say no one should have seven homes, while some don't have any. Though I may find myself stranded in some strange place with naught but a vapid stare, I remember the world and I know we are everywhere. I say the time for the rich it will come. Let me count the ways, victories or hits of the future. Havana, Caracas, Chiapas, Buenos Aires. How many people are wanting and waiting and fighting for their share? They hide in their ivory towers, but we are everywhere. Religions and prisons and races, borders and nations, FBI agents and congressmen, and corporate radio stations. They try to keep us apart, but we find each other, and the rulers are always aware that they're a tiny minority, and we are everywhere. With every bomb that they drop, every home they destroy, every land they invade, comes a new generation from under the rubble saying, we are not afraid. They will pretend we are few, but with each child that a billion mothers bear, comes the next demonstration that we are everywhere.
That was the incredible lyrics and voice of David Robics. For information, go to davidrobics.org.
Cambia lo superficial, cambia también lo profundo.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the US. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.